Hi, welcome to another Coffee Time Chat. With the dichotomy of higher prices and increasing costs and the continuing staffing challenge, we ask how might the hotel industry adapt over the coming years? To help this discussion along, we welcome Bob Holland and Mark Sherwin from Strategic Solution Partners. So will prices continue to increase, or when will this break? Is ADR a limited metric when you consider net operating profit? And following recent comments from Marriott's CEO, is a role in the hotel industry seen as a job rather than a career? Really hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started. Hey, Bob. Hey, Mark. How are you both? Bob, how are you doing today? You well?
Doing well, Trevor. Thank you. How about you?
Yeah, very good indeed. Thank you. And Mark, how are things for you?
All good. Just great to be with you this morning.
That's very kind of you to say so. I hope you'll feel the same after our conversation.
Time will tell.
Okay, so we've got three topics we're going to look to cover. There is a thread that hopefully through my moderating and teasing of you guys and drawing out some points, we'll be able to draw that thread through. So those who are watching and listening will not only gain some insights in one area, but hopefully see how these things potentially have broader impacts and things that hotels maybe should be considering. And for that, we're really going to look to just drawing your experiences of working both at a strategic and also, you know, from your consulting point of view, working within properties and advising properties as well. So before we kick into the topics, it's only fair if I ask you guys to introduce yourselves, so that at least those who are watching and listening know why you are sitting here and regaling about your thoughts and opinions. So, Bob, if I can come to you first and just give us an introduction, that would be great.
Thanks, everyone. Real quickly, I'm the Associate Partner of Operations for SSP. I've been with the company for a little over 7 years and have enjoyed tremendous experiences with this group. Prior to that, I spent time with Wyndham Hotels as head of their global opening team. Way back, I was with Legacy Interstate, where I really cut my teeth and had a lot of on-property and corporate experience, both in property operations and human resources.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Mark, over to you.
Yes, as the operations expert for Strategic Solutions Partners, I draw upon 35 plus years of experience, probably one of the few industry folks that have run both a 66 room extended stay hotel and a 400 room luxury hotel. So I've spanned across all of the different segments, came up through operations as well as sales and marketing. So draw upon all of those experiences for both large organizations and small startup hotel companies. So I'm excited about our discussion today.
Wonderful. So am I. And I think bringing the two of you together, both from having been in a mix of experiences, working strategically, also as you stay, still being down in advising with hotels. Excuse me. Hopefully we'll get some different angles on the questions that we're going to ask. So let's start off with the first one. And this has been, I've actually had this conversation a couple of times in some videos that we've done with other SSP consultants. So I'm really interested on your take because it's an evolving dynamic. And this is this dichotomy of the rising prices, this ability for hotels to still keep charging what seem to be some high rates, but the dichotomy of those high rates with then less high touch services. Like, do we actually see there is going to be a breaking point? Is this just going to continue? And if it's not going to continue, when do we see it breaking, or what's going to trigger that break? Who wants to take this one on?
Yeah, I'll jump in first. I think certainly post-pandemic, you know, we saw a unique market dynamic happening with revenge travel, just, you know, spurring rates in most leisure and, you know, destination locations. And so that afforded really some dynamic increase in pricing power. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, beach or resort destinations. Yeah. And in particular in the U.S., because right after the pandemic, international destinations were not available or open to the traveling public. And so I think you had some market dynamics that were helping the ADRs boost. But at the same time, as you said, there were some operational challenges that were putting pressure on reducing services. And that was both from an availability of labor perspective, as well as trying to protect some margins and, trying to regain some profitability that had been lost over the year and a half of COVID. Yeah. I personally do think that, those two trend lines will intersect at some point and flatten out. You got to remember that there were several years of no price increases as we went into 2020. And so in some ways, we're catching up for 2 or 3 years of lost inflationary rates. And then ultimately, I think the labor market is also going to shake out in unique ways. It will never go back to the way it was, but there will be a difference in how it's applied, and we'll get into that further. But yes, I think the bottom line is that customers will continue to pay prices where they see value in product and services delivered. Where they no longer see that value, then you lose your pricing power. And in particular, I think on the upper upscale and luxury end of the spectrum, customers are willing to pay for those levels of services. At the mid-scale or lower end of the scale, I think the product is a little bit more commoditized, it's harder to differentiate due to the lack of services.
No, it makes sense. And I think there's an interesting word in there in value. I might pick up and come back on that one in a moment. Bob, what's your kind of headline take on? Is it going to break? If so, when?
Well, I think there's a couple of things at play throughout. And I think it's really kind of, underlying theme of all we're going to be talking about today. And that's the dynamics of the industry today, along with the evolution of the industry today. And I think we're at a point in time that, at least in my career, I've never seen the two as such critical factors. Mm-hmm. And in order to get our arms around the future of the industry, I think we've got to be dealing with these factors. And yes, the dichotomy of rising prices and where's the break point? I agree with Mark 100%. It's all in the eye of the consumer on what they perceive value. And when they stop perceiving value, they're going to stop paying, or they're going to find a different product. But I also think there's, the trend lines we look at are going to be different for the different segments. I think we're going to see a different need and expectations in the luxury market, and a different way to address those needs than we're going to see in the full service mid-tier segment. So I think, as an industry, we've got to be looking at, and it goes back again, it goes back to a quote that you talked about, from Steve Jobs, what are the customer expectations, and how do we develop technology to deliver against those? Yeah. And if we're in a high touch expectation segment, then there still has to be those service aspects. If it's efficiency and speed and accuracy, there's different ways to address that. So a lot, I think, we can be talking about today.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I guess, and having asked this question of a revenue management consultant, when I said to him, why are all these? He said, well, why not? He said, if someone's going to pay it, why? He said, we all know how it works. It's basic economics 101. If the demand is there, we're going to keep putting the price up until it stopped being there. And so you get the commercial reality of it. And I think to your point, Mark, when you were saying, we're trying to make up for some lost time because there was a period where we had no revenue. But I guess there will be a point where, I guess there's two dynamics in here, isn't there? It's like, okay, there's one where the price point just stops growing. It kind of caps out and reaches a level. And then there's that piece around the value, which is, okay, I might be prepared to pay that, but now am I actually getting what I wanted to pay for, or what maybe more importantly I expected to pay for? What's the kind of, and I guess that leans into your value piece there, isn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, I think, you know, when I go back to my early days with Marriott, you know, Marriott had one brand, Marriott, you know, and now they have 30 brands.
Yeah.
And so the reason they have 30 brands is because of trip purpose and because of the demand and expectations for customers, not to mention the territorial non-competes for owners for certain brands. But you know, I think about, you know, the pricing power based on the type of hotel product you are. Mm-hmm. I'm going to New York in a few weeks, and I was looking for hotels. And frankly, some of the largest hotels that were heavily dependent on group and business travel, which has not come back as strongly yet as the leisure market, they're priced much lower than they had been in the past relative to some of the other leisure-oriented destinations. So that also plays into the equation of, to your revenue manager's question, he has to fill a lot more hotel rooms than he typically would have from the transient market because he doesn't have group or business travel taking up. But at the end of the day, you know, we do find customers and guests saying their value and seeing the experience that they're looking for based on their trip purpose. You know, why am I going to a particular location or a destination, and what are my goals or objectives while I'm there? And if it's experiential in nature, then I'm willing to pay for those unique, memorable experiences.
Yeah.
If it's to visit a family member who is in the hospital, I'm really not as concerned about my hotel experience. Yeah. You know, I want something that's convenient and no hassle. And so I can concentrate my efforts on the true objective of my travel. So, you know, it's like Bob said, value's in the eye of the beholder. And then you have market dynamics at play. And, you know, of course, the last couple of years we had less supply, you know, being added to the markets, and you even had some existing supply converting to multifamily and single use. And so that also will play into the overall, pricing and service differentiation.
That makes sense. And Bob, just kind of, because we picked up on a few points there, just do we see a point where, because of with the cost of living crisis that everyone's sort of going to be impacted by, that's going to be impacting not only the traveler who may be traveling for whatever reason, to your point, Mark, you know, it can be different experiences, but also the hotel is going to be hit by those price increases as well. I mean, are we actually going into another really potentially difficult period for hotels where they've kind of had these, what some would say are inflated prices? The market's going to maybe normalize in some way. People aren't going to be prepared to spend anymore because they don't have that money in the pocket. We suddenly start to see that will start to impact on bookings and therefore occupancy. But hotels are now carrying these heavier costs. I mean, that feels like a potentially risky scenario could be coming up on the horizon a little bit. What's your take on that?
Well, I definitely agree with that, Trevor. And I think that's, you know, again, as we look at the evolution of the industry, the evolution of the labor market, you know, those two things kind of come together. And you know, again, the impact of labor costs on operating margins is just going to continue to skyrocket. I mean, besides the inflationary cost of living aspect of it, we really don't know yet what the new dynamic in the labor market is going to cost us. What's it going to cost to get desk clerks? What's it going to cost to get sales managers? The price is constantly going up, and I don't think anybody's got their arms around it. And so I think that goes back to the conversation of the business model. How do we either dissect or re-engineer the business model so it's less labor intensive and less dependent on labor, so that we can maintain margins, or at least, you know, as close as possible to maintaining or improving margins. So, you know, that encompasses a whole host of challenges in my mind and opportunities, because I think, unfortunately, or fortunately, I mean, it puts it puts the hotel companies in a position where they've got to listen to the labor market. Mm. And hotel companies aren't necessarily in the driver's seat because they don't have the final say in today's environment. So we've got to determine what's important to today's labor. You know, is it you know, quality of life? Is it, you know, working remote sometimes? Is it job quality and you know, gratification from the work you're doing, the quality of work? And how do we establish the model and the format so that we can make the hotel industry attractive again? Otherwise, we're going to be chasing our tail trying to fill open positions.
So trying to connect our conversation about like high rates, high ADR, if the focus is shifting to profit over revenue or as an additional lever to be looking at, then surely posting record income means little when those expenses that you've alluded to, and particularly around labor costs, are having a direct negative impact on net operating income. What can hotels do? And picking up on your point there, Bob, about sort of looking at the business model, how are we adjusting what we are doing in terms of the business model as a hotel, in terms of from a staffing point of view? Mark, what kind of things are you seeing, or what kind of discussions are you having as to what hotels could be doing to resolve these?
Yeah, I think it's a great question and real life in today's environment. One of the first things we have to do is re-educate owners that some of the margins that they were realizing over the last year and a half are not sustainable moving forward. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, you know, labor costs were lower, not because hotels were operating more efficiently; they were operating more deficiently because yeah. They couldn't find the labor.
Yeah.
And so it was a real struggle. And so even in, you know, in luxury hotels, second service, you know, turn down, things like that were just being eliminated. Optional housekeeping on second or third days became a little bit of a norm. And, you know, quite frankly, I think in some areas and for some tiers of customers, that will be a way that hotels can identify what does a customer really want, and are they willing to pay for it? I've heard some of the large brands are talking about housekeeping for pay, and for short stays. And so it's not an expectation that you get daily housekeeping services any longer.
So kind of a pullback on those services then that were normally expected as a given.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I'm seeing also as owners do realize that some of the operating margins are not sustainable is they're looking for other revenue sources that can drive, you know, profitability. And that may be outsourcing of certain functions, whether it's laundry or whether it's valet parking or mm-hmm. whether there are some food and beverage outlets that might be better served from an owner's perspective. To be outsourced versus having the hotel run it with the high labor costs and high benefit costs. Yeah. You know, for the most part now, it's, of course, with medical and health benefits continuing to rise in cost, the average burden's over 30%. So it's significant, and you know, that all takes away from the bottom line. So
absolutely.
I think it's looking at revising the services. I think it's looking at incremental revenue sources. And I think it's looking at some of these roles that were maybe specialists in a certain area become more generalists and more multifunctional.
Understood.
So that you could potentially do more with less.
I've got a secondary question to ask you, Bob, but any comments to pick up from what Mark's just said there?
No, I agree, and I think, you know, as we look at quality roles, the combination and consolidation of positions is going to be very, very important, and again, meaningful to our team members and associates who are looking for a career, who are looking for upward mobility in ways to grow, you know, their experiences. And something else that, you know, goes back to what Marcus said. Early on, back in the day when he joined Marriott, it was one brand. I think, and I don't this is a fact of life. I mean, it's dealing with public companies, and when we're dealing with public companies today, your strategic window is much shorter than it used to be, mm-hmm. and you've got to operate from quarter to quarter. And while we need to educate owners that current margins are probably not sustainable, that's not going to sit well, and that's not going to sit well with shareholders. And it's kind of a catch 22 that what do we do to either restore or maintain profitability at acceptable levels, so that we can continue to grow and address longer term needs.
Yeah, that makes sense. The question I was going to put to you, Bob, as well, is where kind of technology comes in, because a lot of people obviously will see it as either improving the guest experience. The large driver is obviously from a potentially cost reduction point of view as well. And so, Mark, you just mentioned about looking at how we may reutilize or look at our labor in a different way. And I want to just kind of come back to that point in a minute. But Bob, I'm just keen to get your thought. That do you see sometimes that it almost feels that it could be technology for technology's sake, because let's get the new piece of technology, let's get that in place, it'll save us some money, but it doesn't necessarily align with what the hotel guests want or need, and then how the hotel is staffed? Or do you tend to see that most people are pretty savvy about how they're using technology to supplement and enhance and support the staff and that high touch?
Well, it's interesting to mention that, because I think, again, if you look historically, hospitality technology has always lagged behind. Mm-hmm. It's always been the case of, okay, find something that's working in the travel industry and adapt it to your needs, as opposed to being purpose-driven and developing technology around specific needs that we have in the hospitality industry. And I think, mm-hmm. As we become more dependent on technology, not that we want to take jobs away from hotels, but I think that's a tremendous career path for hospitality professionals, is that the technology side of things and be specifically driven and designed to address needs in the industry.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to what are your customers' needs and expectations, and how can you, how can you reduce labor, make the experience more seamless, be efficient. And again, there's back of the house technology that's not customer facing, and then of course there's the front of the house technology that that's where you have to determine what your customer's tolerance level is for dealing with technology, and is it enhancing the experience or is it detracting the experience?
No, I think that's a good point, and I guess in a way, just picking up on something you said there about how the technology can almost be helping the operation, feeds back a little bit into what you were saying, Mark. Possibly, if you understood it right, if you're talking, I mean, you use the word generalist, but you could almost look at it from a multi-skilling employees. If suddenly, rather than having these roles that are siloed, here's this function, but actually, if you look strategically at how technology can help that interface between different roles and the managing of tasks and the utilization of that resource, then I guess suddenly you could start to maybe even create slightly more broader, possibly more interesting roles that have multiple skills. I mean, are you seeing anything around how that is being adopted, and then maybe how that is used to maybe make the scheduling, the roles a bit more flexible, because that's a huge demand now that has come out of the COVID, hasn't it?
Yes. A great example of that is the advent of remote check-in and mobile key, which basically takes some of the pressure off of the front desk in a hotel, as mm-hmm. a guest can arrive and go directly to their pre-assigned room and enter it without ever touching an employee if they choose. This doesn't necessarily mean that the hotel can automatically reduce the number of employees, but yeah. They would be less tasks to do at the front desk, and that person can then operate more as a concierge, or mm-hmm. can take some pressure off the phones that may have been redirected and be an in-room dining service agent and take in-room dining orders. And, you know, I've seen that in a lot of hotels now where they've kind of, instead of having different areas receive phone calls at your service or having one central person or location to receive all of the calls, and technology and, you know, will allow us to continue to do that seamlessly and, you know, provide the same level of service to the guests, because they don't really care who takes their in-room dining order,
no, exactly.
who they tell they need a crib delivered to their guest room or who they, you know, call down to make a reservation in the restaurant. They don't, or a spa appointment. They don't really care who they talk to. They just care that it gets done.
Yeah, that's a good point. Bob, well,
and if I can jump in, Mark, for that matter, to me, that, you know, that's app-based, you know, programs. I mean, all of this stuff can be done electronically, and you really don't even need to be having the face-to-face or the phone conversation with the associate to make your appointment or make your reservation. You do it on your app, and as long as service delivery delivers to the expectation, to me, that's the best of both worlds.
And I think that feeds back almost so Mark, it almost comes back to when we talk about your comment, our discussion at the front end about high touch. Sometimes to different generations, that could mean an individual, a connection, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. And I know when I look at my children at 21 and 18, you know, they're quite happy to use their, you know, their devices, whatever it might be, to make something happen. It's their natural go-to. Sorry, you were going to say something, Mark, before I just...
Yeah, I was just going to say that the use of technology doesn't necessarily have to be low touch. Mm-hmm. I just read a guest review where a hotel was using robots to do delivery to guest rooms, which is a high use of automation.
Yeah.
And they were able to deliver, find out some personal information, happened to be the guest's child's birthday, and they got the child's favorite candy and some balloons, and had the robot deliver it to the guest room. And so, you know, that was a lifelong memory that I'm sure will stay with that individual for forever. With the use of technology. So it actually enhanced the experience and enhanced the touch point.
And as a child, that's pretty cool, isn't it? I mean, we all loved robots when we were kids. So if you suddenly have one turn up at the door and they've got candy and balloons as well, it's even better.
what more could you ask for?
Absolutely. I just wanted to move the conversation on a bit, because I'm also conscious of your time, but linking what we've just been talking about there and the trying to look at greater flexibility, but also I'm really interested around how the roles might evolve. And the reason I want to pick this up is because I've often had a question in my mind that has the hotel industry or working in the hotel industry started to feel more like just doing a job than actually having a career. And so you then end up the decision being around, well, what building am I walking to today, and what's the hourly rate, and what am I actually doing? And it was interesting. I'm not saying I'm as smart as the Marriott CEO, but I read something today where he was saying that laborism will be our biggest challenge for the foreseeable future, which we've echoed. How do we restore confidence that the hotel sector is not only an exciting and interesting industry, but an industry where people can build lifelong careers? And I think that's that resonated with me for the reasons I've just said, that I feel sometimes that's almost that excitement of the hotel as a career, as an industry to be part of, feels like it had diluted a little bit, waned away a little bit. I don't, what's your kind of thoughts and comments on there? I want to get into that that thing. How do we make it interesting and exciting again? Or is it still the case? Who wants to
Bob,
take that
you
one?
Bob, you're the HR. You're the HR guy. I'll let you lead off this one.
Thanks. And again, I think there's a number of factors that play into this, Trevor. Right now, I get the feeling that every company is trying to deal with this on their own, and they're trying to create the secret formula that's going to give them the competitive advantage and be the preferred employer. I think it's bigger than this. I think it's, you know, it's something that the AHLA, all the state associations, all the major companies need to get together and come up with for lack of a better word, a PR campaign on how do we get what is the message and how do we get it out to today's high schoolers and today's college students? And again, really reinvigorate the benefits of the industry. And again, it goes back to, in order to do that, we've got to understand today's generational workforce. Mm-hmm. What are they looking for? You know, the stuff that motivated us when we were starting our career is non-existent in today's list of priorities for the workforce. And we've got to get away from that. It's never going to go back to that. I mean, again, you know, Mark and I came up in the same, you know, the same generation where if you wanted a promotion, you had to relocate because the hotel company you worked for had one hotel in the city and you wanted opportunities. So you pick up your family and you relocate. And many of us did this every 2 or 3 years and it was extremely disruptive, but it was the careers we had chosen. Today's workforce, it isn't going to fly. So what's important to today's workforce? Again, it's, you know, is it the quality of the job? Is it the flexibility? Is it the compensation? And then again, go back to, okay, let's create a marketing campaign that addresses these issues and gets our message out unified. And then the companies can carve up the pie and figure out how do they get the best piece of it for themselves.
Well, then that comes down to their own individual strategies and marrying that. But as you say, it first of all needs to be a PR piece, you know, that this is a great industry to work in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, you're exactly right, Bob. And I was involved with AHLA about 2 years ago, where they started a mentoring program and reached out to a lot of the major chains to have them adapt, basically an outreach into their communities. Mm-hmm. To start to do some career counseling at you know, entry level roles and with, you know, different communities within the community, like the Boys and Girls Club of America and other types of disadvantaged, communities. And they're starting to gain some traction there. I think it's a grassroots thing that we have to have that, you know, outreach in the local communities to get people excited. At the same time, we have to evolve the cultures of these organizations to adapt to what Bob talked about, the changing needs of this next labor force, as it's this generational labor force. They value different things. They don't value, you know, long-term loyalty to one company. Mm-hmm. They're much more about flexibility and work-life balance. And they're looking at much more shorter horizons for those raises and those promotions that we in the past may have said, okay, it's going to be 18 months. I know my son, you know, he was talking to me, works for a large telecommunications company. He said, you know, Dad, I've been in my job eight months and I've learned everything I can learn. You know, I'm ready for the next job. he's 3 years out of college.
Oh, they're great, aren't they?
that was his perspective. So, you know, I think that we have the unique benefit that, you know, travel, the travel industry, the hospitality industry, you know, it focuses on people that love unique experiences. They have that heart for service and want to deal with people. No matter what, it's always going to be a people-centric business. As Tony said, you know, labor is the biggest challenge. Well, labor is people. Yeah. And, dealing with people. So I think it's both, you know, creating the excitement at the grassroots level and then also making sure that the companies that have the most flexible and most appealing culture, those are the ones that are going to retain and also attract the best talent.
I think the good companies are already changing, and those are going to be the successful companies. And there's always going to be naysayers, and they're going to be the ones that are left behind, and they're going to be the ones that are struggling and get the leftover crumbs. And I'm a firm believer that those companies with a strong culture that starts at the top and permeates throughout the organization, and they walk and breathe it every day and demonstrate it in everything they do for their teams and associates, those are going to be the successful companies. And those are going to be the ones that attract people. Word spreads quickly.
Yeah. And Mark, what do you see?
Yeah, two main points. One is that, I was involved in the takeover of 100 hotels from Marriott during the pandemic. And we absorbed them into a much less structured, much less formalized, tenured organization. And what we found is that some of the individuals that worked for Marriott, they need a high structure environment to succeed and to flourish. And those people that need that high structure environment, they struggled this new organization. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there were others that were much more entrepreneurial and much more had the ability to operate on their own and make decisions where there wasn't a quote unquote playbook that led them all the way through the process. And they thrived in this new organization. So point being that it's not always one size fits all as a company begins to change because they have to be flexible. I know my daughter is an event manager for a hotel. She's just starting out in her career. And the company that she works for just implemented a 4-day work week. So she still has to work her whatever it was, 45 or 50 hours a week, whatever it is, but she can organize her schedule the way that pertains to her and still get the job done.
Wow.
Well, and I to piggyback on that, Mark, I think that's the key to the culture in today's environment is it's got to be individualistic. It's not one size fits all. It's what, as an employee, as an associate, what are your needs? How can I address them? How can I structure and create, structure the workplace and create the job that gets the best out of you and be different than how I work with somebody else. It's just like our customers, our guests, we don't treat them all the same. We shouldn't be treating our associates all the same. So.
And you know what, Bob, it's what I have found is that when I go into a hotel, depending upon the generation that the general manager grew up in, there are some biases and there are some paradigms that need to be adjusted. And those that can adjust will continue to excel. Those that can't adjust, as you said, are going to get left behind.
Well, as Darwin's theory is often misquoted, isn't it? It's not the strongest that survive. It's those that can adapt the fastest.
Exactly right. And that's what makes it exciting. I mean, that's why people are attracted to this business in the first place, because every day is not the same.
One final, and I just want to pick out, that was going to be my last question, but I've got to ask this one now, because you make a really interesting point. Because also, when you, I think you mentioned, Bob, when you were talking about it being, I can't remember the exact word, like individual, it's got to be tailored to what you need and also what you need of that employee for that role. I guess there's a part of where also the community that you're in and where you're drawing the talent from also has a bearing. And so picking up on your point, Mark, about large organizations that have a very structured, rigid way of working and rigid structures, there almost feels like there could be a little bit of tension that, if you're in one of those properties and here's your standard operating procedure, but you're maybe what you're trying to achieve in your property and maybe what exists within your community and the talent pool doesn't necessarily fit or work with that. Is there the flexibility? Everyone's got to wake up and deal with it. What do you guys see of that as a possible challenge?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that you have to deal with. I mean, quite frankly, branded hotels the owners have been dealing with that, from day one, where, management contract says this, and, I know you may want to do X, Y, Z, but unfortunately you're not able to do that. But I think that as long as you have the flexibility in certain things, and I remember that I'll use an example from the Ritz-Carlton. You know, back in the day, they had 20 basics and they were prescriptive. And it said, you know, you will escort a guest. You will answer the phone on three wings. You will, you know, say good morning, good afternoon, my pleasure. And it was a very scripted environment. About 15 years ago, they changed from the 20 basics to 12 service values, and they focused on the outcome. And so if you focus on the outcome of engaging the employee or engaging the guest, there's always a box that sandbox that we're going to have to play within. But if you have leeway within that, then I think it can satisfy both needs.
Makes sense. Bob, you are nodding. Any kind of comments into that?
Well, I agree. I mean, again, I had an experience early in my career where I was working with a management company and working with a major branded partner. And, you know, the owners of the hotel could not understand the business reason why the brand was requiring certain things. And I was lucky enough to have an RVP with that brand that said exactly what Mark did. It's the outcomes that are important. As long as we agree on where we need to get to, it's really not, you know, as long as it's legal and it's ethical and you're not harming.
Of course, yeah.
as long as the outcome is what matters, and that's the end game. And you know, I think larger companies and more structured companies have to adopt that attitude. And again, brand standards are great if they serve a purpose, but if they're there just as a, you know, just self-fulfilling prophecy for the brand, you know, it's hard to sell them, and it's hard to convince owners that this is something they need to do. It's hard to convince employees it's something they need to do just because it says you need to do it this way in the manual. So there has to be that flexibility. The structured companies have to adapt and understand the local working environment and the conditions and provide some latitude to, as long as the outcome's where it needs to be.
I think if ever you, it's a great point, if ever you use the phrase, well, that's how we've always done it with the current generation, having learned from my own children, it's like, you know, they need a better answer. You better have a better answer than that, because they're going to, you know, if you employ them, that they're just going to put the chair back under the desk and walk. That doesn't motivate them at all. Brilliant. Look, I'm conscious of your time. Any final thoughts, Mark, your any final thoughts from your side? Well, we covered everything that you wanted.
No, I think, you know, this discussion was really energizing. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there's no black and white, you know, here. There's a lot of gray area. I think, as Bob said, you know, if we focus on outcomes, if we focus, you know, continued with the passion for the business. And, you know, frankly, I see it in the next generation of hoteliers. They're going to operate a little bit different than I did as I was coming up through the ranks, but I still see that same commitment, passion, and energy.
Yeah, perfect. And Bob, final thoughts from you?
No, I agree. And I think it's dark as it may seem, or as challenging as it may seem, I think it's an extremely exciting time in the industry because it's going to force some very creative change. Mm. And again, the industry hasn't always been, you know, the leader in change. So I think, you know, it's survival of the fittest. We go back to we need to create new ways.
We need to be creative. We need to be adaptive, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah. No. Brilliant. And I guess I always use these crazy analogies, but what is it they say, that a diamond is created under pressure? So you need pressure to create a diamond, don't you? And so the hotel industry is coming under pressure, but you will see creativity will come out, that through that pressure it will create some pretty pretty neat ideas, I think, that others will then
It reminds me of a great quote from the great philosopher Mario Andretti, who basically said, if everything seems under control, you're not moving fast enough.
Good one. Yeah, very good. Very good. On that note, I'm going to let you guys go. Really appreciated your time. It's great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks, Trevor. Thanks, Bob. Have a great day.
Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Bob and Mark for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. You can reach us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. If you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. And if you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. Anyway, until next time, Thanks for listening.